generous support for Coastal Windage comes from Cameron's Restaurant Pub and Inn, and now RV Park. Cameron's is the only true British pub on the coastside, featuring 19 beers on tap and more than 60 brands of bottles. Come for the food and stay for the fun. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday. Open mic night on Thursday and karaoke on Friday and Saturday. Cameron's Restaurant Pub in Half Moon Bay.
I've got a friend who's big and round and oh so jolly gee whiz. Lend me your ear and you will hear just who this fellow is. He's Punky Punkin, the happy pumpkin, happy all the day. And his great big smile will chase your cares away.
Chase them away, away.
Broadcasting live from the KHMB studios in downtown Half Moon Bay. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. The Coastside's own live call-in talk radio show. From Pescadero to Pacifica and beyond. This is the place for Coastside issues, hot topics, and you. And now, the host of Coastal Windage, Mr. Ruben Truthmaker, and his co-host, Crystalyn.
Good morning, Coastside. And this morning, instead of Ruben and myself, you have Crystalyn and Michelle. The Coastside Butterfly coming to you. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Crystalyn.
And if anybody wants to call in today and you have not memorized the number by now, 650-560-9851. 650-560-9851. How are you this morning, Michelle?
I'm awake.
I know. It's kind of... The weather's been back and forth. It's been warm and then drizzly and then warm and then drizzly. Kind of messes with me.
A little bit of everything.
Yes, it is also very early for a Friday, but are you getting, you know, stoked for tonight for Halloween on a Friday?
Going to Montero.
Nice. That's our plan, too.
I get to wear my cape.
A cape? Like a long cape?
No, it's just got the sticker on the back.
Oh,
I'm going
cute.
As... Super Buzz.
Captain Buzz. Oh, that's awesome.
And my hair is really long right now. I needed to get a haircut. I made an appointment. My hairdresser, she retired. And so I haven't had a haircut in 9 months. And it's going to be big tonight.
Yes.
That's what I'm going with.
If ever there was a night for big hair, it is Halloween. Yeah, I got up this morning at 5 a.m. to start prepping and getting ready and for my Queen Bee costume, which has, I think, 14 different parts because Lord knows
I can't wait to see that.
Can't not go big. It's probably the largest outfit I've ever worn.
Well, Crystalyn said she's got to get me back to my place right away because she's got a 45-minute dress, to get dressed for her next meeting.
Yes, and so it'll be really really fun. Tomorrow,
do you have wings and everything?
Of course.
What? Yes, and a stinger.
Not a stinger, because I'm going to be a queen bee. So it's kind of Victorian-esque queen kind of an outfit, but in black and yellow. And then...
I could have been one of your drones.
But yeah, there you go. Well, and then so then best fiancé, Jesse, is going to be a beekeeper.
Oh.
And so that'll be our couple's
He's keeping
costume.
His queen.
Yeah,
oh, my
go.
God.
And then tomorrow's
so
his birthday, so...
Yeah.
We try to celebrate, or he likes to treat Halloween like his birthday party, which is...
Well, Montero's
really
having a party for him tonight.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Montero, for showing up and showing out for Jesse's 44th birthday. So it's been a couple of months since we've been on air together, and lots of cool things have been happening, and something that we were kind of just, started chitty-chatting about this morning was kind of the housing stuff that's coming down, and I thought we would chat about that a little bit. I know housing's a hot-button subject for a lot of people. There's, I think, it's common to say that there's two sides of the fence, and I feel like on this particular, there's like eight sides to the fence.
I agree. It's really complicated. In fact, last Tuesday, the Planning Commission, just a few days, I had a meeting, their normal meeting, and the house...
Which Planning Commission?
Half Moon Bay. Yeah. Thank you. And actually, the week before, the San Mateo County Planning Commission had the same, not the same exact presentation, but they're going through their Cycle 6 housing element process. And both the county and the city are kind of getting down to the wire where HCZ, I think HCD has already approved the counties, and they're going through the rezoning right now. And the city of Half Moon Bay is going into their fifth draft, which was the final draft that the city council should approve. But what was really interesting about it is the state of California Housing Community Development Department, known as HCD, they're in charge of creating the RENA numbers. I was talking to myself last night about how do I talk about this with all these acronyms, but I have to go there. RENA is the Regional Housing Allocation Numbers. And ABAG, the Association of Bay Area Governments, Crystalline's like nodding like you're getting it right so far because she knows this stuff better than I do. This HCD and ABAG, they get together and they put together the RENA allocation numbers every 8 years, and we're in cycle 6. So they've been doing this since 1969. We just haven't noticed it because our last RENA cycle was 240 houses that we had to come up with. And
basically, that's just the state telling counties and cities
yes.
how many houses they have to
yes.
house the people that want to live in those places.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, will say, like, the county is doing it in El Granada. They're taking their a CUSD site got on their site inventory list. Once a site is on that list, like the Catholic Church is on the Half Moon Bay's list and they don't want to be on the list, once you're on the list, you really can't come off the list unless you're going to redo the whole thing.
And by that list, it's a list of spaces that the city or the county or the state has identified as affordable housing could go here.
Correct.
Not that it has to go here,
correct.
But that it could go here.
That's right.
And basically, it's just any open lot or any lot that is big enough to house a multi-unit complex is
that's
really
right.
the crux of it.
Yep, exactly. And so they want to put a school there, which is fine. It's their property. So that's part of the trick of the whole RENA process is that they're literally preparing it to be rezoned so that they're making it easier for somebody to develop it. But neither the county nor the city are going into development. That's not their job. So developers may or may not come to develop. But the idea is that making it a little easier in the coastal zone now. As if that's not all. Yeah, the California Coastal Commission and the HCD, which are going, you know, head-to-head with each other. Coastal zone is really ruled by the Coastal Commission. They tell you what you can do and what you can't do. But what was interesting with this meeting and this fifth draft is that the HCD said to City of Half Moon Bay, you've got six little edits, go do those, and then we'll, you know, get it through the city council. On the post that I did for it, there's a timeline, so I'm going off my memory, which is not always correct. And then it's going to hit the City of Half Moon Bay City Council. They'll approve it. And then HCD has got to come back, and then some rezoning will have to happen. So all the cities and counties in California are at different stages with their housing element. Nobody's going together, you know, like shaking hands kind of thing. And but with the HCD, and I had to read the staff report twice, and I had to actually email the community development director, Leslie Lacko, just to make sure I understood. HCD is going to make Half Moon Bay take the Measure D downtown map to the ballot because the town center map is different. And you can, when you go to my post, you'll see the two different posts.
And if I remember correctly, the town center was identified as essentially the intersection of Highway 1 and Main Street, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it's the colorful map.
Yeah.
The more black and white one goes back to 1998, which seems like a long time now. And this was discussed about a year ago, so I was aware of it. I just didn't realize, oh my gosh, HCD is actually making this go to ballot. And that, it's a fascinating conversation. If you want to watch the meeting, it wasn't that long, but it was fascinating because the commissioners are like, they're going to make us go to ballot. How can I make us go to ballot? And I'm like Googling it, you know, and it's like, oh, apparently the state does this sort of thing all of the time. We're just not used to being told what to do. But that's what we're getting told to do. Now, the other thing that was confusing for me was ADUs. So Measure D controls the number of houses that get built in 1 year in Half Moon Bay. They're going to take ADUs out of Measure D so that you don't have to count them within Measure D. That means you can build more ADUs. I think Tim Pond would be happy with that. He's an ADU guy and contractor. And then the other thing that I didn't understand, but it was in writing, is ADUs are not part of the RENA numbers.
That is wild to me. So for our people at home, so an ADU is a place for someone to live, yeah. Right? It's an it's an apartment not attached to a complex.
Right.
And so according to California, let's just say for Half Moon Bay, and I'm just making up a number, let's say Half Moon Bay has to come up with like 400 housing units.
480, yeah.
Oh, I was close. 480 units in this particular amount of time. And an ADU, which is a place for somewhere to live, is not going to count towards that. So we could feasibly approve 200 houses to add ADUs in the back, and that would not count in the eyes of California.
That's my understanding right now.
That is insane.
Now, going back to Measure D, again, this is sort of complicated. It's sort of like a moving, you know, target in terms of coming up to speed on this. But the HCD was suggesting that the ADUs would get a half point. I'm not sure how that...
They're no different than an apartment.
A house has more bedrooms, might be the thinking. I don't know. I mean, I'm literally figuring this out in real time. So if anybody wants to call in and has some information about this, I'm quite happy to hear somebody's opinion.
650-560-9851. Please make it make sense.
Just put that number in your contact so you can call an emergency like this. Yeah. And another post that I did was, it was actually a city press release on the California Coastal Commission asking everybody in the state of California what they think about ADUs. And they want, California Coastal Commission wants to streamline ADUs. So we're in the coastal zone. So if you could go, public comment, all caps in my post, go to that and make your comment about whether or not you would like the ADUs to be more streamlined in terms of their permitting process. I know down in Pescadero, that's a big deal. You know, they're going to solve a lot of their farm worker housing with ADUs.
It's like the perfect solution, because you've got towns like our town and so many other towns that don't want to go up. And one thing that we are missing here, in my opinion, as somebody who had to move, you know, moved here for the job 7 years ago, you know, and ended up having to commute from Monterey for a little while, is that because there's not that many apartment buildings, it's really hard to find an entry-level place to live, and especially if you're a single person or, you know, and can't afford a whole house, nor do I need an entire house. And so ADUs are like the perfect melding of adding units. You're not going up. They're small and, you know, hopefully easier access point of entry for people with one income or mm-hmm. smaller incomes. And a lot of people use them to bring, you know, family members or, you know, the old school name for them was granny units. I think people in general would have such an easier time approving ADUs in their neighbor's backyard versus an apartment complex at the end of their street. And so for California to consider not counting that and is mind-boggling to me, first and foremost. And secondly, I actually take umbrage. And when it comes to development, I am pretty down the middle. Like, I understand both sides of when people love a development idea and when people don't love it. I can totally get on board with both sides. Both sides always have valid points. Mm-hmm. I do think that it is, at this point, very odd that the state is telling counties and cities how much housing they have to have.
Oh, I agree.
And I understand that it is geared towards affordability, and I understand that. And I think, and that we need more stock, I understand that. But putting a number on it and saying, okay, in the next 10 years, you have to come up with 480 units, not 10 units, not 20 units, not we've looked at your population and these are the number of people that are having a hard time finding housing or whatever it is. And just to have a person in an office somewhere in Sacramento.
Yeah, so there's supposed to be a, excuse me, a calculation, you know, matrix that they put it through, but I'm not a big math person. I'm a word person. So, could there possibly be an answer to this?
Yeah, that would be great.
But they went from 240 in the last cycle to 480. So that's like a times two calculation.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing that as being compelling.
Hi, caller. Who do we have?
Hi there, guys. This is Birgitta Bauer in El Granada.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm good. I just wanted to give you some insight because we had across from us an ADU proposal. And, well, actually, they don't have to propose. You know, they can just build. And they can build up. You can put an ADU on top of your building, on your house.
Oh, yes. So,
that's a JADU. A junior ADU is attached, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you can build upwards and put it, well, I guess, you know, like on top of your garage or on top of your house.
Right, yes. So, yes, we just, I'm sorry, I should be clear. I was comparing it more to like a 3- and 4-story apartment complex.
Okay, great. I just wanted you to know.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. And I also, yes, because I do live in one of those ADUs. I live...
And you is you're upstairs.
Yes, I am. I am over a garage in a beautiful apartment that I love dearly.
But I think Brigitte's point is to be noted.
Yes.
I mean, I know I covered a story that she wanted to cover on Story Polls. And I was just talking to a contractor just last weekend, and I was telling him about the story polls, and he was immediately like, oh, I love story polls. And I was like, well, I love story polls too. And that's one of the ways that you can tell that an ADU is going to be built or any kind of, you know, small, because there's a lot of infill lot, you know, sort of building. And, you know, when you just put a picture up of the building, we as humans do not have a very good ability to look at a size of something and describe it. So you can look at the picture and you can say 33 feet and you just like look up into the air. You don't know where 33 feet is, but the story poles really help.
And for people who may not know, story poles are when somebody is about to build something and is trying to go through the approval process, they are required to take little sticks, essentially, and build the outermost frame in its correct proportions so that the people around them can get a feel and a sense for what it's going to cover. Yeah.
And I think the most famous story polls in recent history is the Hyatt Hotel.
Yeah.
We certainly saw a lot of story polls for many years. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, the ADUs are becoming more ministerial in their approval, so they're are less stages for people to interface. Like if you want to build something in El Granada, you're not in Half Moon Bay. You're in the county. You're in unincorporated county. And you have to go through the CDRC, which is the Coastside Design Review Committee. And that's kind of where, you know, they talk about just sort of basic design, you know, sort of alignment with the rest of the community. And then it has to go to the Planning Commission. So there's a lot of different stages where things get vetted, but often, you know, without story polls, people are busy. You can go through 6 weeks or something like that, which is sort of the notification of 30 days or 45 days. I don't know what it is. But there's a certain period of time that, you know, the public can comment and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that time can go very quickly and somebody can miss what's happening and they don't see anything until the construction, you know, trucks, you know, show up. But I mean, that's where we're at. I mean, I think in El Granada, at the Cabrillo Unified School District land, which is it's where GCSD, aka me, when I was on the Parks Advisory Committee, was trying to build a golf, a disc golf, and that wasn't liked. And I'm thinking, okay, now you want to put apartments in there? Like, it's really
is that
not
the same
liked.
Plot that they were
same
wanting
plot.
To do?
Seville, that area, yeah, yeah.
Then when the Cabrillo was looking at doing teacher housing, was that the same plot?
Yes, yes. So I actually went back to.
I wonder if that's why it ended up on the list. Was because.
Well, it's funny because I got into trouble with Superintendent McFetridge because I did a post based on what Steve Monowich, who's the director of planning and building for San Mateo County. I watched the planning commissions for the county, and in his director's report, he always has a couple of nuggets of very useful information. And he mentioned, this goes back to last year, when again, they were just starting the conversation about rezoning, you know, after the whole Reno process. And because I guess Sean McFetridge, Superintendent McFetridge, had gone to the county and said, hey, you know, we've got this land, you know, we're looking at building some. They'd hired Brookwood Advisors and they were looking actively for spaces where they could put housing, mm-hmm. you know, for teachers. That's all, sounds really good. And they wanted to put housing also at Hatch. I'm not sure where that project is right now. We have a new superintendent right now, Superintendent Ramon Miramontes, and he's really great, very responsive. So you have any questions about this, and you know where to go. It turns out that when Sean had gone to Steve Monowitz at the county, Director Monowitz basically took it as, oh, here's a bunch of land that I can put, you know, apartments on, or, you know, multi-family units or whatever it is in a space in the coastal zone.
Which, and basically, when the county and the cities need to come up with these lists for the state, it's like they just need to show good faith that there's space to put these things.
Yeah, I would say it's kind of a good faith, like, you know, pointed out. But we're in cycle six. It's like Will Gibson, he came to the MCC. So when you go to this post on my site, I included both the county conversation and I included the Mid-Coast Community conversation, which as you, well, there were several people from the coast that came to the county meeting, which was really great. That's what you got to do. You know, if you don't want something or you want something, you have to be there at the public meetings. And it's all Zoom. You don't have to go in person. So it's very empowering. And then MCC, there, obviously, there were more people commenting because we're here locally, and it was in the evening as well. So they're both very informative. But they're going to make us, so when it gets back to this this ballot measure and doing the, you know, following through with the cycle six final draft for the city of Half Moon Bay, if we don't do it, they're going to sue us.
The state.
The state will sue us.
Yeah, that's the
other thing. Just so everybody is really clear that this is not like we're just, you know, the city and all the jurisdictions are not like just following the rules. They have to follow the rules or we'll get, and the other thing, we will get sued. The other thing too is you, until your housing element is finalized by HCD, you are not eligible for state funding at all. Mm. And we're a city that has a hard time because funding grant criteria are based on how much people make, how much the houses are worth and all those types of things. And we do really poorly in the grant queue for funding. So we got to get this figured out because if we don't, we're not going to get any funding, you know, like for all the traffic stuff that we need to do.
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah, because and housing is such a hard topic because there's, you know, we do need more housing, like, that is for sure. We need more entry level, minimum wage housing.
I call it first housing and last housing.
Oh, there you go.
My first house was a modular. My last house is now a modular.
Yeah.
And they're low cost. And I have no mortgage and no rent. So that takes a little bit of planning. But the idea is you need first housing and last. I mean, to be able to do that, the only thing I could afford was a modular, you know. Yeah. And so you're right. Now, I did hear KQED on forum. They had a three-part series on housing. I didn't catch the first two parts, but the third part was really fascinating. And I'm going to go back and listen to the other two parts because I need to be more educated. And this lady came on and says, well, we have a housing shortage right now, but in 10 years we won't. And I stopped what I was doing, and I go, and I was just like, because I can't record a radio, right? And she said, the baby boomers are dying off. And I thought, oh, the population's going to go down. Just like the school populations go up and down. That's why, you know, you have schools. And I never thought about it from a demographic point of view, but it's true that we are going to have a susurration in population over the next 10 to 20 years, which will change the housing market. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I also like to say to people about housing in general, since we have almost 8,000 houses on the coast side, is that there is something called HIP housing. It's home sharing, but you don't necessarily have to go through HIP. It's a county-run program. It's been around since the 70s. But you know, if you know a teacher, you know, you can clean up a single bedroom, and having a young person in your house is probably going to be kind of a lot of fun. You can pick things up on the way home and all that kind of stuff. I just think that you know, home sharing. Excuse me. I grew up in a boarding school. I like being around people. I don't mind being around people. All day, all night, you know, kind of thing. Everybody finds their own space. But I think for older people, too, having somebody living with them makes the life a little bit more energetic and richer. So I suggest home sharing. 8,000 single bedrooms on the coast. Just think about it that way.
So, yeah. Oh. Also, back in the 80s, we called them roommates.
Yeah, roommates.
It was very, very common for people to have roommates in their until they were, you know, married or.
Well, remember Three's Company,
friends, they were all roommates.
Yes, and what was it? What was the older ladies? I forget them.
Laverne and Shirley.
No, it was Laverne and Shirley, but then there was a whole bunch of ladies.
The Golden Girls.
The Golden Girls.
Yes, exactly. Right. Roommates are awesome.
So we need to make Roommates hot again.
Yes,
we need
absolutely.
We need another comedy show.
Well, first and foremost, I want to say thank you, and I appreciate that you listen to all of these planning and architectural advisories, and I know that you listen to a lot of meetings in general, but the ones in regards to development are numerous between Coastside, County, Half Moon Bay, and like all of that, so I want to really emphasize and point out that you've had to listen to thousands of hours of meetings from different jurisdictions and different people just to piece together. So, which is one of the reasons why I think it's so difficult for the average person to stay connected and in the know about these types of things. And, you know, acknowledgement that we're, you know, the average person is very busy, and especially those that have, you know, kids and all of those things. But the fact that you have to listen to 7 different agency meetings consistently just to piece together what's happening with the housing elements and what the state is asking and what the county and cities are trying to do to meet that county requirement is, like, it's very unfortunate that it takes that amount of.
I think that's what journalism has always been supposed to do, is to take, you know, large pieces of information and you know, simmer them down. Now, my style is simply I use original source content, so it's pretty efficient. There's a video where the public agencies, both the staff and the electeds, are talking. I don't need to over-talk them. I don't need to. In fact, I really don't like to tell you what they say, because what they say is what they say.
But you still have to watch 3 hours of meeting.
But it's the titles
it's the titles nugget.
And the titles are the nugget. I know there's a lot of people who just scroll through my buzz mail, and they just look at the titles. And I know that I'm an instructional designer. So everybody's gonna find their information, you know, in their own way. But getting the titles right is so critically important. And actually, I worked with Leslie, the community development director for Half Moon Bay, and I threw out a title, and she came back and she said, "That's not the title I would choose. I understand, you know, you're a journalist, and you know, and this, that, and the other." And she said, and she was really understanding of my position. And so I took the title that she wrote for me, and I had to add ADUs and Measure D into the title. And I said, I have to do that because people won't be able to search it on my website and it won't be found on search engine optimization well. And in fact, Rick Hernandez, who's on the Half Moon Bay Planning Commission meeting, he texted me a little while ago and says, you know, I was looking for something and I Googled it and you came up.
That's my favorite. You always come up like one or two in my Google searches.
Or I'll say, I don't know. And somebody will Google me and they said, well, it's right here. It's on your website. Like, oh, shoot.
And on that note, we will take a break and we'll see you when we get back.
This is Community Radio for the Coast Side.
100.9 KHMB.
Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
Hi, this is Jay Michaels. Make sure to join me and Stan Warren Luttrell coming up at 10 o'clock right after Coastal Windage. We'll have a look at today in history, plus we'll get to a brand new forgotten find. It all happens at 10 a.m. right here from 100.9 FM KHMB.
And we're back. If anybody would like to call in and join the conversation, 650-560-9851. We were talking about housing. Today is Halloween, which is a magical day. And something else that we were going to touch on, which is coming up faster than you would think, just because it is already the end of 2025.
And I can't believe how fast this year has gone. Amazingly quick. Yep. Well, people are already throwing their hats in. You know what that means? It's election season.
Time.
Yep. 2026. This will be my fifth election cycle. I go into my 12th year with Coastside Buzz. Every cycle, I try to get a little bit better at getting the information out. This will be the earliest I've ever talked about the election. Thanks for having me on so I could do this. In Half Moon Bay, we will have three openings. That would be Deborah Penrose's district, and Mayor Brownstone's district, and
Vice Mayor. Oh no,
and Vice Mayor Ruddock.
Yeah, Vice Mayor.
Yep. And so there'll be three openings, and then Paul Nagengast and Patrick Johnson. They won't get their next election until 2028. So we are not at large anymore. For those who haven't understood the districting process, because it's like Rena, it doesn't happen in sync with every other city and every other county and whatever. I literally listened to every single jurisdiction's redistricting process, and that was so I could understand it. And in Half Moon Bay, at the first districted election, Debbie Ruddock was opposed by somebody, and so she had to go to the election, but Councilmember Brownstone and Penrose were not opposed, and they decided to not put their names on the ballot just to save money. It wasn't that much. It was like maybe $15,000. I disagreed with that, and I've been clear about that, because as the first cycle of districting, for people who don't know we're districting, that was the best way to market and advertise that we're districted. Because only people in their districts are going to get a ballot. And so neighbors, they're going to get a ballot, and it's going to say, oh, our district is, did you get a ballot, you know, to their friends and whatever. And then they're going to realize that they're districted. And that means it's a much, you know, we've got five districts in Half Moon Bay, and so it's much larger. I mean, we have, 12,500, 13,000 people in Half Moon Bay. And the same amount is in Mid-Coast, actually. And when you look at that number and you divide it into five, you're talking about 3,000 or 4,000 people per district, which is not very much. Now, the good thing is you can literally walk your neighborhood and meet everybody in your district if you want to. And I know that's what Patrick and Paul did, because it's smaller at large for, 13,000. That's a bigger ask. So that makes it more difficult, too, for renters. because renters are can't just re-rent. If they get evicted or they have to move, they can't. They have to move into their own district, which is a small space. And it happened with three different public agency electeds over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. They all found their place, but that's a difficulty as well.
And there, it's long as in the last couple of years since. So most areas have gotten forced into redistricting.
Forced, yes, absolutely.
Because of people bringing lawsuits.
Voter Rights Act.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And so for larger towns, let's say like the city of Los Angeles.
Yes.
Districting makes a lot more sense because somebody's district could be as large as our entire city or our entire coastside.
Exactly.
So, yes, you would, making it smaller chunks where it is, where there are more distinct neighborhoods and areas, and ensuring that everybody has a voice in such a large area population, that makes sense to me. When yeah. you've got a town of just under 12,000 people, and then you have to break it down into smaller chunks, unfortunately, what we've run into is really good candidates not being able to run as readily because at the time that they're, you know, an election happens every 2 years. And at the time that they would feel like, you know, maybe their kids are in a good place where they could run, or maybe they're, you know, on the edge of retirement and that feels like a good time to run, when they're feeling like they could actually take on this monumental job that mm-hmm. so many of them do for free. Mm-hmm. Thank you very mm-hmm. much. You guys are
small stipend. Yeah, but yes.
Then they find out that their district is not one of the districts that's up for election, and they would have to wait another 2 years to run, and potentially their lives change so drastically in those 2 years that, you know, we lose out on good candidates because
sure.
the districts are so narrow. Right. And then you do have issues where you have candidates that don't even have an opponent. Because, again, somebody who might be willing to run against them is in a district that's not up that year, so they can't run. So it's long been discussed that there should be some kind of middle ground for the very, very small cities like ours,
right.
where districting actually creates a little bit more of a problem than a solution. And again, like you were saying, if somebody needs to move for some reason, they have like a 4-block radius
yeah.
that they have to magically find a house to, you know, a place to live just so that they could keep their elected status
mm-hmm.
Versus like in LA where you could still, that's like, you know, a yeah. gazillion blocks.
Yeah, and my understanding is this came out of a lawsuit from Los Angeles, and I believe it was the Latino community and the Chinese communities figured out that they have enough geographical, you know, parity that they could control a vote that was in their interest. And that's sort of where the idea came from. And then there's an attorney that goes up and down the state because it's a law, you know, people aren't following it. He just sues you and it's like a $15,000, $17,000 sort of entry fee. It's a little bit like the whole ADA thing mm-hmm. as well. There are some, I mean, if you're starting to want to be part of the elected team, start with Parks and Recs. You know, start with mm-hmm. something small. Get into the habit of, like, I went to school
for bicycle pedestrian. There's lots of
exactly.
There's lots of commissions, yeah. Architectural, like
advisory,
whatever your thing is.
Yeah, commission. Yeah, I mean, those are small little chunks. And we're missing a San Mateo County Planning Commissioner. It's got to be Mid-Coast. But Lisa Ketchum was the chair, and she passed away this year near Easter. And it would be great to have somebody on the coast. I spoke to Supervisor Mueller about it, and he said interviews are happening. So, but we've been without somebody representing the coast side now for about 4 months. We need to have that happen. And that's a small chunk. I mean, really, the prep for that is you're reading maybe 2 or 3 agendas once a month, and then you show up for a 2-hour meeting in San Mateo County. And that's the that's the price of being involved with, you know, your community. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, I do this not for a lot of money. I make some money. But I do it because I, well, so my first opportunity to be involved with the community to take action on something was Wavecrest. And there was this lady, Leslie McCarthy, she lived on Railroad and I lived on Myrtle around the block. And we had kids all the same age and part of Coastside Mothers Club. I think it's Coastside Parents Club now. And she was a wonk. She must have worked for a public agency. I don't know what it was, but she knew what she was doing. They were going to build Cunha down at Wavecrest instead of rebuilding it where it is. And my playgroup, I mean, half of them all lived, you know, north. That means they'd have to come down past Kelly, you know, in 92 and go all the way down to Wavecrest, drop their kid off, and then go back home and then do it again because if they have another kid. And it just was a silly idea. But it was backed by some developers and there was just a lot of power and money behind it. But she said, we have to collect signatures. And so I got out there in front of Safeway and I was collecting signatures. Back at the time, we didn't have New Leaf. It was New Leaf, so pretty much everybody was coming to Safeway. And that's when I discovered that Half Moon Bay ends at Frenchman's Creek. And literally half of my playgroup lived in El Grado, Moss Beach, and Montero. They couldn't vote on this. People who are part of Cabrillo Unified School District, mm-hmm. delivering their kids, every year for 12 years, will not have a say as to where this school goes. And it ended up getting on the ballot, and we shut it down. Mm-hmm. That's why Cunha is where it is. And it's kind of funny. I kind of did it, and then I just stepped away from it. Didn't really think about it too much. And then I started working actually for KHMB, you know, and listening to, you know, the community bulletin board. And it takes a while to engage with the community is what I'm trying to say. It's, it can be overwhelming. And you can feel like you don't know stuff, but I'm always available. If anybody's interested in a topic, I'm always there to answer and send links and things like that. But we're at a time right now where a lot of people are retired and on public agency boards and commissions and stuff like that. And I'm very pro term limits. And the reason for that is you need to get new people in. Now, I will say 8 years is plenty of time to get a project done for the most part, because a lot of people will run for office on a particular topic. And that's the other thing. If you're running for office, you have to run on all of the topics. You know, your constituents may be varied, and you have to address all of them, just like Supervisor Mueller does. If you look at his District 3, you know, geography, it's mostly land, and people are spread out all over the place. But he has to find everybody, you know, on their, you know, platform, if you will, like I do. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Nextdoor, you know, Weekly Buzzmail, all that kind of stuff. So I think when it comes to, you know, people always say, I didn't know that was happening. And I'm like, you know, there's enough feeds out there between yours, your calendar, my calendar. They overlap quite a bit. I'll say I have more like just entertainment and stuff like that, but I work my calendar. It is free and self-submit, but I'll go actively to different sources to make sure that everybody knows that something is coming, you know, down the pike. And then in terms of content, you know, if you want to see what I'm doing, you just go to the archives and you see all the buzz mails and you could just click on one of those. One of my buzzers, she says she likes to get a cup of tea and her iPad, and she sits in her chair and she just clicks around until she's tired. And so there's a lot of ways that you can ingest the information, but it's important that you engage with information. I read the review cover to cover, still digitally, but I'm old, so I still remember the paper. But there's good information there as well. And we all have to work as a team, as a community, to make sure that we all know. Like, had a great meeting this last week at the Oceano. It was a meeting that was fraught with all kinds of points of view. But the idea was we're going to get Caltrans in the room. And it was hard to get Caltrans in the room. And it was first going to be at Supervisor Mueller's place, but the sound's not good. So at the very last minute, they move it to the Oceano, and people are like, what's going on? And that's just because I think they sensed, I can't see all the comments that the public agency staff are getting or Ray is getting. So I thought there was a lot of interested people, but I didn't think there would be more people than could fit into Ray's room. I was wrong.
Yeah, that was full.
That room was packed. They had to get out more chairs.
And we should note that this was in, the meeting was in regards to the proposed
Burnham Strip parking lot project, which has now been named the Pillar Point Safe Parking Project. I think I left a couple of words out there. But I think this is a great example of how the community came out and said, we really hate that East Side thing, to make it go away. And, you know, for my part, I talked to General Manager Pruitt. He's my boss. I work for the Harbor District as a quasi-PIO. I basically watch their meetings and then make sure their meetings get disseminated to the public. And I'm on the inside so I can talk to Jim and I say, hey, I'm going to send you the next door feed of the people who really don't like what, you know, you're planning to do here. I want to make sure you understand that it is universally disliked, and they've got good reasons for it. And then, you know, he absorbs it, and I just put it out there. And then again, and the RFP did not say that it was going to look at the west side, so people were quite correct in being surprised that all of a sudden the west side was being looked at. But I knew, because I talked to Jim, that that's what they were doing. They were going to, you didn't like the east side? Let's go look at the west side. And that's why there's a west side plan now. And then the other thing that was sort of swirling around in the background that may not have been as obvious was Deer Creek. And Deer Creek's part of the dredging project, and I think I spoke to this a little bit last week. And that is going to be in the area where the parking is right now, so there won't be any parking lot there. It'll just be Deer Creek management that goes back to Surfers Beach, so it'll reduce some of the dredging needs and stuff like that. But it's a process, and to the point that we were talking about, this is a pretty quick process that it's promulgated by the Coastal Commission telling Caltrans you need to find 75 more parking spaces. And why would the Harbor District want to take on a Caltrans task kind of thing? But I think to Jim's point, General Manager Pruitt, his point is that he's actually under parked for his boats and trailers. They need another, based on California Boats and Waterways, they are at the very minimum right now, mm-hmm. which is why you have all that Highway 1 parking. Now, you could argue that it's just a few days a year, but Jim is JAG. He's ex-Coast Guard, and he's a lawyer, and he knows it's illegal. Caltrans is calling it illegal, and so you're dealing just with another group of decisions. But I reread the Coastal Commission decision just recently, and there's all these little things that they put in. Basically, if they take the parking out and they can't find parking, then they got to take the bike lanes out. So there are lots of things, but this is what community needs to do, is to stay on top of it.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that multiple projects are kind of converging. And
yes.
You know, because there's people that have feelings about the Burnham Park project, mm-hmm. which is a GCSD project. And then the parking thought came along, and then that sparked a different debate. And it's a lot of the same people, but then it got, you know, kind of mushed together that they were kind of similar projects or one in the same. So it did make it even more difficult to discern what people are talking about, because there's a little bit of parking that's attached to the park project. And then with the Caltrans coming through. So there was essentially three projects that kind of started off as like individual projects, and they all just happened to happen in the same spot. And this really brought up this... highlighted an issue that continually seems to happen, where agencies don't realize that they need to talk to other agencies just to understand what each others are doing. So not necessarily to have thoughts and feelings about what each other is doing, which obviously they would because we're human, but just to let each other know.
Like, I mean, they don't even know. They don't, the left hand doesn't know. And the interesting thing is I work with a lot of the PIOs from the county, and every once in a while I'll get an email from somebody from the county. Like recently it was a guy from the DEM, and it was something about ham radio operators, and he was a ham radio operator. And he looked me up, and he saw that I was a ham radio operator, and he thought what I was doing was really cool. And I was like, I get to keep track of everything on the coast side. I have Sam Licardo's aides, they swap back and forth, and they literally keep track of what's going on with the public agencies, because that's mostly what I cover. I do have all the music on the coast side too, just saying. That's how they keep track of what we're doing. And if we had, you know, like a Pacifica Buzz and all those types of things, it makes it much easier for the agencies to follow what the other agencies are doing. Yeah. And that's, to your point, that is actually one of the things that has the most valuable sort of asset, is that. Example, there is a coastal commission lady that I've been in communication with, like a couple of them, and I asked them the questions about the realignment plan, because how the coastal commission is asked, the coastal commission's asked Caltrans to come up with a plan for Highway 1, because those rocks are an emergency CDP, coastal development permit, and they wanted a permanent plan. Well, it was supposed to come out in June. Now I hear it's going to come out later this year, maybe before the end of the year. But that is kind of like the linchpin. If they just raise the road, that's one way of doing it. If they move into their right of way, that's another way of doing it. I mean, just there's a space right there. You have a road from point A to point B that's got to get past Capistrano to Coronado. Think of all the different ways you can do it. Now, for my part, getting back to the parking, the one sort of, it hasn't been talked about very much. And I had one of the people who didn't like Burnham Strip, she's a yacht club member, and she, you know, felt comfortable to ask me, you know, this, that, and the other. And I took an afternoon, and I got Google Earth out, and I started looking around, and I looked at Murata West. You know, it goes from Magellan to Coronado. You have Surfers Beach on the north end. You have the Miramar restaurant, you know, beach at that end. And there's just beach all in between, and laterally, there's a county bathroom that's already there. And so I used to do a lot of parking, like for drive-ins and COVID and this, that, and the other. So it turned a Mavericks contest. So it turns out you have parking spaces that are between 8 and 9 feet. And if you make them 8 feet, which I think is a little too narrow, you can fit in 350 parking spaces on Murata West. Just two lanes, just two lines of parking. And if you make it 9 feet, then it's 275, something like that. But I think that will take care of the parking needs, and it gets people down to Surfers Beach.
Mm-hmm.
You're not crossing the highway.
That's the big thing. The traffic that gets created from the people darting across is so unsafe. And is part of, you know, a big part of the reason why there's, like, extra traffic in that spot, from people having to stop to let somebody go across, or somebody just starts going across regardless of people have stopped or not.
It's funny that, not funny, but it is interesting that I don't think I know of a death there. I know my son nearly got killed there, but it was nearly. And you see close calls all the time, but in a way I have to cross there. Sometimes I don't own a car, so I, when I get around, sometimes it depends on where I'm going, but sometimes I have to cross there.
I think the thing that, for lack of a better term, bodes well for that spot not having as casualties is the fact that it is wide open spaces. So when somebody does, if you are driving,
that's a good point. Yeah,
it's like you've got Surfers Beach on the ones on the west side, you've got Burnham on the other side, and it's just wide open. There's no trees right there blocking
buildings,
your way.
Yep.
So it's like when somebody has their car door open and they're getting out of their car, or start, you know, they've got their surfboard and they're starting to run across or whatever, they are very visible.
Yeah.
Whereas other parts of Highway 1 have so many trees and houses so close to the edge and all of that, that if somebody crosses in those other areas, there's so much other things
like
in
Moss
your
Beach.
Eye line.
Moss Beach is really busy with trees and all kinds of stuff, you know, and you get a lot of accidents there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, that's parking in that area. I did a podcast with Coastside News' David Gorn a little bit on this topic a month or so. If you haven't checked out his podcast, it's up on Coastside News.
I think he's also on Spotify.
Yeah, he's on Spotify too, yeah. And So,
and we should also note that MCC has recognized that there is an issue with agencies not realizing that they have overlapping projects, and so they are working to create a meeting with the different agencies in the room to talk about their projects. And, you know, ultimately in the perfect world, agencies would be in such constant communication with one another that when they did have projects come up, they could not only just talk about them and keep each other informed, but maybe find places where they can partner. Because one of the things that I don't, and I'm probably going to get a lot of heat for this, but when people bring up, why is the harbor trying to solve a Caltrans problem? I personally don't, okay, I want to acknowledge, I am not a fan of the west, or of the east side parking, but I don't see a problem with the harbor feeling like they have an issue, seeing that Caltrans potentially has a similar issue and trying to work with them to figure it out. Now, I'm not saying back, you know, however people are perceiving that that's happening or whatever. I'm just saying in general, like, it would be really great if agencies could find more ways for them, for each other to come together and say, hey, the community, we've got a shortfall for something. You need to kind of figure out how to help. You need to kind of figure out, like, let's come together and figure these things out. In the long run would be really, really good.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, Supervisor Mueller getting Senator Becker in the room on the coast side was pretty cool. I mean, it wasn't really so much for him to do other than to show that there's an understanding, and then Kelly Ma, she's a rock star at Caltrans. You know, she came to the city of Half Moon Bay, I think it was 3 times, to do presentations, you know, on the pork chops and stuff like that. And, you know, she showed up, and then Janine Crawford is their PIO. I finally got to meet her, and I just said thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, the most valuable thing that came out of the meeting, and Ray was very astute about this, is that we were probably hour and a bit in, I would say 75%, you know, through public comment. And Ray sort of stops the meeting and he stands up with the mic and he goes, so how many people want the West Side? And it was in Ashton Hack from the Coastside News. You know, he kind of sort of, one of the last paragraphs, every hand in the room went up. And I didn't have the presence of mind to take a picture. But it was telling that literally a problem had been solved.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Just like that.
Yeah.
It's not going to go backwards from that acknowledgement from the public, because that was the whole point of the meeting.
And I've heard Harbor General Manager Pruitt acknowledge that they heard the public when the public was speaking out, not loving the East Side project.
Right.
And then saying, hey, we can look at we own land on the West Side. We can look at that too. And kind of shifting gears. So, the public having input definitely is strong. And I will reiterate what I have mentioned before. The more voices, the better. Having the same 30 people be the ones to shout their feelings is not as helpful as having 200 people have dialogue about their feelings.
Right.
Because that just makes it more balanced, more well-rounded, a fairer process. So the more people that can get involved to these meetings, the better.
I agree. And once you start the process, you become, I mean, when any public agency is going to do any project at all, it has to go through feasibility, which is like, can we do it legally? You know, is there space? Then you go through design, and it's confusing for the public. It's confusing for me because you seem like you've made a decision about something, and it's just like, no, this is just like back of the napkin. And the next one is like, we're writing it on paper now. And then
pencil.
Yeah, in pencil. And I think Nancy Marsh from the Granada Community Services District with the park explained it very well. You know, you go through feasibility design, and they have a plan now, but it's going through county review. It has to go to the Coastal Commission, and at any point, and then it's got to go through funding. So, which is going to be funded by GCSD because they have the, that's how their funding works, food, property tax, and stuff. It's their own little account. But she's trying. It's taken 8 years to get this far, and people have lost interest. I mean, pre-COVID, we had a pandemic, and so it is very hard. But Coastside Buzz, that's one of the reasons why I do incremental coverage. I try to, if you go to any of my posts that are complicated, you'll see maybe up to 25 different posts that I've covered for 2 years.
Yeah.
And you just read through the titles, and you get the gist of sort of like this, but you can click on something and get the video of that time, so...
Well, thank you again for everything that you do and going to all 8,000 meetings every month. And just really appreciate Coastside Buzz. So coastsidebuzz.com. And you can sign up for Michelle's email and have the week's worth of information just sent straight to your email.
On Thursday afternoons.
And so thank you so much for keeping up with everything.
Thanks for having me.
And we hope, Coastside, that you have a wonderful Halloween tonight.
And safe.
And a wonderful week ahead. And Ruben will be back with us next Friday. I hope he's out having the time of his life. And with that, we bid you adieu, Coastside.
The talk of the coast.